Wake up, wake up. Niners win, Niners win. Man, it was close. We got a lot to get to. We're going to try to keep it positive, but there's definitely a mix of positive and negative on this one. Let's go. Wake up, wake up.
It's just fantastic to have you here. Welcome to Wake Up in season. Officially, here we go. It is 9 a.m. West Coast on a Monday, 9:15 technically. Damon Bruce, Larry Krueger, like and subscribe to both of these channels, if you would please. Larry, it is rare where we have breaking news in between the game that we just watched and the Wake Up that we host the following day. We actually got a little. Colton McKivitz. 3-year, $45 million extension. I'm glad he played pretty well yesterday because this would have landed a little flat had he not. Look, it's good business. It's also, I think, their way of saying this entire time that we were dealing with Juwan Jennings, we were thinking of you too, big fella. This is a smart extension. It's one that I think it's a win for both sides. I've got no complaints at all with the Colton McKivitz extension.
Well, I mean, look at what Jalen Moore got from Kansas City, and Kansas City's not even starting Jalen Moore. So, I mean, there's all kinds of money that's out there in the marketplace for decent offensive linemen. And Colton McKivitz is better than decent. He's a good athlete. He's smart. He's tough. He's a reasonably priced player. I know there's a lot of people, he stinks. He sucks. He's this, he's that. He plays a very, very tough position. There's no question about that. And he goes up against some really, really good players. And is he the best left tackle in the game? No, but he's also not being right paid tackle. Like the best left tackle in the game or right tackle. I mean, he could play either spot and they trust him. So, you know, I mean, I know there's a lot of people that want to see the 49ers just, you know, say goodbye to basically everybody not named Dom Pooney and Trent Williams, but they really like Colton McKivitz. They've made that abundantly clear. He had a pretty good year last year. He's in great shape this year. He's put on 15 pounds of muscle. You know, he's a great athlete. I mean, this guy was an all-state basketball player and he's 6'6", 315 pounds. So it's hard to find great athletes walking around at that size because it's hard to find great athletes at that size. These guys always get dramatically overpaid in free agency. And I kind of think, you know, I don't know what your takeaway on this is. We'll hear in a second, but I kind of think this is the precursor to Trent Williams is going to retire. Now, why do I say that? Because I just think the 49ers are signing McKivitz partially because they think that there's probably a better than 50-50 chance that this is it for Trent Williams, and they don't want to replace both tackles in the same offseason.
I think you're right.
I think that's it.
Here's the thing. Whatever happens to Trent Williams in his career going forward, he's very likely in his last 49ers contract, right? So
I don't think he'll play. You think he's going to play somewhere else, you mean?
Maybe. I mean, that's a guy who will, I think, do things for the right money. And by the way, I don't say that as an insult at all. We'll all do the right things for the right money. But there's a guy who I think would extend his career for one more paycheck at the end when it looks like it might be said and done, especially now that he's in his I only play on game day portion of his career. If some NFL team's like, you never have to go to training camp, you're hardly going to practice, you only got to show up on game day, here's a check for $18 million. Yeah, I could see him coming back for one more go around the sun with somebody if the Niners were to move on. I could also maybe even see the Niners want to buy into that one more year because he is Trent Williams, for goodness sakes. But I do think you're right. I think that this is a little insurance on the tackle position. It's a reward for a player who, you know, again, he's not Lane Johnson. He's not perfect, but he is pretty damn good. And when you look at what is wrong with the 49ers, it's usually not Colton McKivitz. And the guy's always out there on team forever injured. Colton McKivitz is available. So that, I think, makes, you know, him even more valuable to the 49ers than he might be somewhere else. So no problems at all. Congratulations to him. I know one of the things that we talked about during the entire Juwan Jennings headache was if you sprinkle a little on Juwan, Colton's going to feel like he got left out. This is the, we're doing business with you too, big fella move. And I think it's a good move for all involved. No winners, no losers, just good business. Congratulations to Colt McKivitz and the 49ers who win yesterday. Like you said, Larry, there's not a feeling amongst 49er fans that they're ready to go dancing up or down Market Street after that one. There were an awful lot of echoes of last year's shortcomings, frustrations, bad jobs that, you know, followed them into this year. This is a year that's supposed to be defined by a rookie class. It's going to make a big impact. We hardly saw any of them in any significant way, positively or negatively. So it was a game that I think a lot of people weren't prepared to have wash over them. But when it was said and done, they win. And Larry, I got some positive takeaways.
Like, well, before we get to that, why don't we get into thanking our sponsors off the shoot so we don't forget them. Of course, on the Krug side, we're brought to you by Pig and a Pickle, the best barbecue in all of Northern California. Check them out. They're in Emeryville. They're in Court of Madera. They're open 7 days a week from 11 a.m. till 8 p.m. or until they run out. And they do run out. I can't tell you the number of people, though, yesterday who's like, Krug, I'm watching the Niners, and I'm going to go over to Pig and a Pickle and get some lunch takeout on the way, you know, to cater our Niner thing. I mean, I got at least six or seven. I forward those yesterday to Damon, the owner of Pig and a Pickle. So thanks to Pig and a Pickle. And also, this 49er football season is presented on the Krug Show by Sleeper, the fastest growing fantasy platform in the world. It's the one-stop shop. You get blazing fast news, real-time stats, group chat, season-long leagues, and, of course, Sleeper Picks for daily fantasy. Use the promo code Larry and Sleeper will match your first deposit up to $100. Links in the description. Terms and conditions do apply. And thanks to Sleeper for being a proud sponsor of the Krug Show. And of course, later on, the Krug Show is also brought to you on this side by Habas Law. And we'll tell you more about Habas later on.
Larry, I made some plays on Sleeper yesterday. Darnold got me with his rushing over. As soon as he had that 9-yard scramble, my parlay was gone right there in that one moment. Otherwise, I was on it. Freaking Sam Darnold. Otherwise, yes, we love you, Sleeper. Also a sponsor on Damon Bruce Plus. Of course, we're always brought to you by Ike of Ike Sandwiches. I had people telling me that they were enjoying an Ike sandwich during our live stream and watch party yesterday. That always puts a smile on my face. Thank you very, very much. And please come and join yours truly, hopefully Larry Krueger as well, showing up at the Dubliner West Portal on Saturday, October 4th. We're going to get going at 4:20, and we're going to have ourselves a fun Saturday night over at the Dubliner. We're going to have a DJ spinning actual vinyl. No CDs, Larry. We're going with vinyl. And,
wow.
And it's going to be a really good time. We certainly hope that you can make it. We hope everybody here watching in the Bay Area can make it out to the Dubliner West Portal. It should be a really good time on October 4th. Thanks to them. Thanks to you. And shall we just start? Thanks to Robert Saleh for coming back to the Bay Area. I want to go positive here, Larry. And look, we're 8 minutes into the live stream. We have yet to use the words Jake or Moody. So congratulations to both of us. It'll happen. But let's talk about how Robert Saleh. This guy can play with what he's got. He can play around what he doesn't have. He is really good at adjusting on the fly. And even though there were elements of that game yesterday that were definitely frustrating, when you look at all of it, from 35,000 feet, not boots on the ground level, the Niners had a really good day defensively. They held the Seahawks to limited points. They kept Sam Darnold on the ground basically most of the day. He, you know, was not a big passing day for Sam Darnold or anything like that. For a defensive afternoon that wasn't fantastic, it was a pretty fantastic defensive afternoon, I thought, for the 49ers.
Well, I mean, especially since, you know, the 49ers have such a young defense and it was going to be baptism by fire. And yet Robert Saleh, I thought, stole some series in this game. You know, that third Seattle series where Seattle went 3 and out. And on the first play, Walker got stuffed by Fred Warner for a 2-yard loss. And on the second play, on 2nd and 12, Darnold threw it away. But Huff had pressure off the edge. And then so we get to 3rd and 12. From the 33, and the Niners are, you know, looking to go three and out and are looking to get Seattle to go 3 and out. And what did Saleh do? He blitzed Dante D. Winters. And he got pressure on Darnold, and Darnold threw to JSN, but he threw it incomplete. He didn't have the right timing on the play because of the missed time mistiming of the play because of the blitz. So I felt like Robert Saleh stole that whole series. I thought he showed some looks on second down pre-snap that were impressive. And then that next series where Kalia Davis got the tackle for a loss on the second down play. And then sure enough, on third down, Darnold went to Walker and Winters and Bosa were all over it. I thought both of those were great Robert Saleh sequences. And if you look at this, you know, Robert Saleh was brought back to rebuild this defense. He brought back his mentor in Gus Bradley, and he's got a really good defensive staff with Chris Kocurek and Johnny Holland, Daniel Bullocks, Ray Brown. It's a good staff. Then they draft six key defensive players in the draft. And if you look at this game, Seattle ran it really, really well in the preseason. They averaged 5 yards a carry in some games, 5.5 yards a carry in the three games. Not in this game. Niners shut it down. They allowed 26 carries for 84 yards, only 3.2 a carry. Walker only averaged 2 yards a carry. Charbonnet looked better. He had 3.9 a carry, but the longest run of the day, there was 1 7-yard run by Seattle. There was 1 8-yard run. They didn't even have a 10-yard run. So, the job that the Niner defense did negating Seattle's explosives. I mean, JSN had 124 yards, but his longest, he had 140 yard. They gave up 140-yard pass play. Otherwise, that was it. There was nothing over 10 yards all day. And there was no run longer than Darnold's 9-yard scamper.
I thought one of the biggest plays of the day was that Renardo Green pass breakup on a Jackson Smith and Jigba target late in the game. That was huge. Saleh's done a great job. There's no doubt. And it's only going to get better. Like this is, you know, I think he's working with his rawest fistful of clay in week one, and it will take greater shape and greater form as the season even goes along. So I'm pretty excited about a defense again, which is going to be dotted with the efforts of rookies who we didn't even see much of yesterday. Siegel, though, played very, very well. DeMondrick Winters, man, that guy, he was flying all over the field. He was on my TV screen all game long. He played really, really well. So really good, positive takeaways defensively. And then obviously Nick Bosa, when it mattered most, Larry, you know, when it mattered most, he salted that game away. I also thought, and this goes back to what Robert Saleh came in here to do and the things that he had to fix, the Niners were terrible against the screen last year. You could screen and tunnel screen the 49ers to death, and teams often did. The way that Bosa came out and played Jackson Smith and Jigba on that screen, Larry, means that they've been studying up how to get better on screens. Didn't you think?
It wasn't just last year either. I mean, I was asking Steve Wilkes about this quite a bit the year prior. There was just way too much room on screen passes, and it just, the angles looked wrong. The 49ers, every play. I mean, when you watch the Niners defend the screen last year, it was like an advertisement for throw more screen passes, because it just, even when they made the play, it just looked very haphazard and lucky and, you know, random. Like if you ran three screens at the Niners, they'd tackle one for a loss. They'd tackle one 10 yards down the field and one would go for a touchdown. I mean, it had that kind of vibe the last couple of years. So I thought that was good. I mean, the screens that they did throw were snuffed out so thoroughly and so early that it really negated, Kubiak calling more of them. I thought the screen game was really, really good. Yeah, I mean, to hold Seattle to 146 passing yards, to limit their ground game to 3-2 a carry, And this is early in the year, and it's not like, well, hey, you know, it's a young offensive line that's coming together. Yeah, it's a young offensive line that's coming together, but it's an offensive line that had come together in the preseason when was pushing people around and bullying people. And so the Niners kind of bullied them back. So I thought that was, you know, that first drive, Charbonnet had a bunch of nice runs, and then it seemed like the run fits got better after that.
I would agree. It got better as the game went along. And again, sometimes you're watching it and it feels wrong. Then you go back and you look at the box score and you're like, wait a minute, that was better than I thought it was. And that's the way a lot of that game felt. Brock Purdy's never lost in Seattle. I don't think that that can just be glossed over as some stat that really doesn't matter, or he's just, you know, he's not really driving the bus. He's along for the ride. I don't care. Brock Purdy has never lost up in Seattle. He is 4-0. The 49ers were 2-12 in their 14 games up in Seattle before Brock Purdy appeared on their radar. So on an afternoon where, you know, not being thrilled with how Brock Purdy played is fine. You don't have to be thrilled. He played very, very well around a couple of choices that almost eliminate how well you were playing up to that point. Bad turnovers, and even on the game-winning touchdown, that ball was in jeopardy too. I saw that it was the least likely to be completed pass of the NFL's afternoon, and it was the touchdown to Tongas. So, you know, that it finished great, but on a day where Brock needed to be, you know, good, he was good when he needed to be. He was scary when that allowed the Seattle Seahawks to hang around this game as much as any missed field goal did with the turnovers. But, you know, overall, again, you got out of Seattle with a win. There's, you can't complain too much about that.
Well, you know, it was an interesting day. I think every game, you know, we're getting a more complete picture of who Brock Purdy is every time he goes out there and plays. And once, you know, we've seen almost every outcome, then I think you can put your arms around exactly what kind of player he is. I think what you're looking at is you're looking at a phenomenal player. I mean, I had several of his plays. Like, give you an example. This is my first half flash list. This is just, and this is only when the flash list only includes guys who just had what I would consider special plays, like a really great play. That makes the flash list. And Purdy showed up on this flash list a ton in the first half. Why? Well, the first third down, third and four, buried inside their own territory, and he throws that nice timed out to Kittle. That was a dime.
It was a great opening drive, by the way. 14 plays, covered the entire length of the field. You could not have started better.
And Purdy in the drive, I think, was 6 of 7. Purdy on that same opening drive found Pearsall against Kobe Bryant on a post, which was a 25-yard reception. It was one of the best anticipatory throws he threw all game. He had thrown that pass well before Pearsall had hit the break point. So, and he put a lot of air on it. He threw it to a spot. I mean, it was really hard to defend, and it was a beautiful pass. Now, Purdy also went to Pearsall on the very next play for 12 yards on a great throw. And this was a defender, Damon, in Purdy's face off the play action, boot action. And all of a sudden he flips around off the boot, and here's a defender like 4 yards, 5 yards in front of him. Now, this was a play that Colin Kaepernick never could make. He would have to outrun that guy, stiff arm him. There's no way he could throw it, layer it over him. Instead, Purdy, with the defender in his face, perfectly layers the pass right to Pearsall, 12-yard pitch and catch. Then there was a pass where Purdy went to Kittle against Julian Love and Witherspoon. It looked like double coverage. He put it right there, a dime. Then there was a play where Purdy scrambled and got a first down. And the announcer's like, wow, that was a hell of a scramble by Purdy. So he made a number. And then, of course, how can we forget the fourth quarter 45-yard dime to Pearsall, which was his longest pass play of the day.
Really, I think it was the longest play of the day maybe for either team. And it was a beautiful route and catch by Pearsall, too.
Clutch, very clutch. So that's the good. The bad is that Brock threw two interceptions and could have thrown a third. And he, you know, love him, hate him, whether you love this part of his game or not, he is in some ways is the opposite of Alex Smith. Alex Smith just would not allow himself in the Harbaugh era to throw the 50-50 ball. Purdy will throw the 50-50 ball, which is good because otherwise, you know, those are opportunities lost. But if you throw a few 50-50 balls, you're going to lose 50% of the time, and the ball's going to go to the other team. And if you don't have a lot on it, those 50-50 balls become quacking ducks. I thought the first interception was bad, but McCaffrey, I think, slipped down. Is that the one we're talking about, the first one he slipped down?
Yeah,
and then when he floated it to Ernest Jones.
Picking up the blitz.
The Ernest Jones one was the first one, and that was bad. Okay, it was a great play by Ernest Jones, but Purdy basically, once McCaffrey went down, Jones didn't have to honor that. He got a little deeper, but he and Purdy couldn't slide it over the top of his head to JJ, and Ernest Jones got an easy pick. The second one was just god awful. You got three defenders there. You got a fourth defender lurking. You don't put anything on it. You float it down. You float that ball. I mean, it could have been picked by anybody. It was like anybody's ball. That's just too. That's too cavalier. That's too.
The ball. Here's the thing.
Can't take that kind of chance.
Every single quarterback in this league is throwing interceptions this year. All of them. No one will have an interception free season. All quarterbacks, good quarterbacks, great quarterbacks, throw interceptions. There are like levels to interceptions, though. You know, and trying to make something happen doesn't mean that was a bad interception, because you're trying to make something happen. But what are bad interceptions are when you're throwing lollipops. And that was kind of a lollipop throw. And he threw into triple coverage. A $53 million a year quarterback will throw interceptions, but he can't make the choice to throw into triple coverage. So that's where that's the second pick was the most offensive thing Brock Purdy's done on a football field in a while. It nearly happened again at the end of the game, too. I mean, Tongas comes around and saves the bacon. He basically intercepts Brock Purdy for the touchdown himself, because there was a Seahawk right there to make a play. But Brock, you know, he did it. He did it. And on a day where you just needed to get out of Seattle with a win, they did it. And look, I tell you, Larry, on a day where, you know, a lot of young defensive linemen, a lot of experienced defensive. Did Bryce Huff play yesterday?
Yes.
You know, he did, but he didn't make a big difference. And then you could say Nick Bosa was on the periphery of the edge of having an important, and then all of a sudden he comes up with the huge defensive end triple play. The sack, the strip, the fumble recovery, third time in Bosa's career he's done that in one game, by the way. When it mattered most, Nick Bosa salted that game away. That was just a huge moment for him. It's the biggest play that he's made on a football field since the Super Bowl season. It really is. So that was big for Bosa, I thought. And look, Christian McCaffrey might not be the guy he used to be. He might not have that gear or the speed, or maybe it's going to come. It wasn't necessarily there in week one, but dude, that guy is still very much a weapon, an awful lot of touches. If he had a great offensive line in front of him, I mean, Christian McCaffrey's runs that fail usually have to do with contact that's being made on him behind the Niners line of scrimmage. I mean, he runs into more defenders on the wrong side of the line of scrimmage than he should. That's on the offensive line. But man, McCaffrey, he was the workhorse yesterday. He was. And you know, maybe Kyle Shanahan's got a little bit of a Christian McCaffrey drug problem, but I understand why he can't stop using him, because for much of the game, he's the only guy out there, especially with Kittle getting hurt, making big plays for you. So a great game, I thought, from Christian McCaffrey. Even though he didn't get into the end zone, he was all over that game plan. And look, I think, you know, Larry, at the end of the day, no matter what went wrong, no matter what you didn't like, no matter what, you know, rubbed you the wrong way about how the Niners played or functioned or how special teams looked like an adventure still, Seattle is one of the better teams, I think, maybe in football this year, and one of the more difficult defenses to play against this year. And Brock was facing a pressure rate that was the most extreme of his career, with not a lot of help around him to make plays. And with too many mistakes, too many penalties, too many turnovers, devoid of special teams improvement, they win in week one in Seattle. Like, I mean, you know, we wanted to see a little bit of a better brand of football, I think, across the board. But at the end of the day, an ugly win is better than a beautiful loss. And that's a good way to start the year. And now let's wait on, you know, the severity of the Kittle hamstring to really talk about how week one went. By the way,
we should probably get into a little bit of the negative here as well, which is that the 49ers had four major areas in the offseason that they needed to improve on: the defense, the special teams, the kicker, and the offensive line. And they improved on the defense, but they've swung and missed at improving at the other three. They didn't improve the kicker. They came back with a competition that they said was legitimate, but obviously didn't feel legitimate because the guy who had the better stats didn't win the competition. So it just felt like a exercise there. You know, oh, we need to have some competition for Jake because we want to go with Jake, but we got to have some competition. So they had this nominal competition, right, and the guy who actually kicked the higher percentage wound up losing that competition and lost it early. So they didn't improve their kicker. They're going with the same joker kicker. They're going with the same joker special teams. I mean, their special teams continues to absolutely be a disaster.
Brand
from the beginning to the end, the special teams in this game was a complete disaster.
Yeah.
The hold on Jair Brown on the first punt return put the Niners on their own 5-yard line for the first drive of the year. So before they've even snapped one freaking ball on offense, Brant Boyer's special teams unit has them buried at the 5. Okay. Then Moody misses a short field goal. There was another penalty. Sky Moore had a fumbled ball that he was lucky enough to retrieve and recover in the second quarter. I mean, what the heck? I mean, what are we supposed to believe about the special teams unit? And then this offensive line, which we've been told over and over and over again, you know, the Niners offensive line is actually really good. And, you know, it's like our eyes are deceiving us, and or we're just football simpletons and we don't get it. We don't understand what a good offensive line looks like. Well, let me just throw this out there. The Niners averaged 3.3 yards per carry, despite having the great Christian McCaffrey, who, according to the Niners, is the greatest running back in the game. So you have the greatest running back in the game, and he can only average 3.1 yards per carry, and you as a team only averaged 3.3 yards per carry, and Brock Purdy was sacked once, hit 8 times, and was pressured on 60% of his dropbacks. He was running for his life all freaking day, and yet your offensive line's not a problem. And the day after you re-sign a guy, you extend one of your offensive linemen. Your offensive line, how could it be good if you can't run and you can't pass protect? How can that be a good offensive line?
Yeah. Look, it's a problem, Larry, and it's going to be, and they have decided to remain in the Jake Brendel business, and that could be what undoes an awful lot of the progress they were hoping to achieve this year. I mean, that line in the middle, whenever you saw Dominic Pooney get beat, he was getting beat to the inside. He's not getting beat on his right shoulder. He's getting beat on his left shoulder, because why wouldn't you attack there, because he's playing next to Jake Brendel? So that's how you get to Brock right there. That's the door you walk through. And it's a problem. It's a problem. It's a problem that we begged them to address either through the draft or through free agency. They chose not to. So they're choosing to live in this world. Back to Brant Boyer. Okay. Not better at all. You know, Brant Boyer, not better at all. Not only was the return coverage suspect as hell, you know, you're dicking around with the likes of Sky Moore. Like, you were brought in to be the special teams fixer, and still, you're making moves in the 11th hour, which says we haven't fixed anything. We're bringing in Sky Moore like 6 days before the season starts because we still don't have this figured out. Guys that I said we need to draft, this guy ain't even on the team, will never play in the NFL. That was all for Brant Boyer. You know, the field goal.
Stop listening. The Niners, please stop listening to these coaches about personnel. Brant Boyer could be a great special teams coach and know nothing about special teams personnel. It can happen. He's proven it. Damon just cited it. He pounded the table and wouldn't shut up about Junior freaking Bergen. He's a total average nobody who's not big. He's not fast. He's not anything at this level. And instead of having some scout say, hey, special teams coach, shut up. We'll handle this. They said, everybody's like, oh, Brant Boyer. Guess what? Your special teams coach is going to want a special teamer. How about maybe an offensive lineman? How about Willie Lampkin? How about Jared Ivey, who's a pretty good defensive lineman? How about Chris Poupall? How about, you know, there's all kinds of football players out there, and you're going for kickers, punters, specialists. You're acting like you're the 85 Bears and the 86 Giants and the 84 Niners all rolled into one, and all you need is a little window dressing here and there to really win it all, when you're delusional. You are delusional. Your offensive line's not good enough. Your defensive line's not good enough. And you're investing draft picks and draft capital in FCS nothing return men.
Okay.
I mean, stop listening to the coaches in draft time. Let them sit in another room. Have your scouts draft. How hard is that?
You're a couple of years older than me. You and I have been watching football on our lives for a combined, let's say, 30 years of me really paying attention, 30, 40 years for you really paying attention. We got like over 70 years of watching football experience between the two of us. In your entire life, have you ever seen a field goal protection caved in the way the 49ers field goal protection was caved in on that block for Jake Moody last night? I mean, look, maybe that was an excellent Seattle play. I don't know. I think it was also probably full of special teams mistakes because that's who the Niners are. It's in their DNA. They will fuck up on special teams. It's what they do. And
three penalties on special teams.
I've never
yesterday.
Seen.
How many times you had a your return man, your handpicked return man fumbled. Your handpicked kicker shanked another 35-yard field goal. You had multiple penalties on your coverage units. Saron Neal, you told us, was a Pro Bowl special teamer. If he was out there, I didn't see him.
Who's making a tackle? Who's making a tackle? About? Late in the
what
game,
they almost
let the ball come back to the 50-yard line.
The Sky Moore allowed the first ball to fall and didn't field it, so the Niners started their first, and then the penalty started the first drive on their own 5-yard line. I mean, the Niners were the worst team in football as far as their starting position, field position wise, and their opponent's starting field position. That what they call the secret yards within.
Right. Hidden
the
yard.
Niners were last in this category last year, and sure enough, they get the special teams coach. They defer to him like 19 different times. I asked him, I said, were you given any assurances? I didn't need any assurances, really, because we need assurances that this is not a train wreck of a special teams unit. So they brought this guy in. They're acting like this guy's Frank Gans and Dave Taub all rolled into one, like he is the special teams god. And they're still crappy on special teams, and they're still buried in a hole. So, I mean, this offseason where you had to find a new kicker, didn't. Had to find an upgrade on your offensive line, really didn't. I mean, you found some backup guys for down the road, but you're still got the same situation where you're basically a tackle injury away from Brock Purdy running for his life and the whole season being flushed down the toilet. One tackle injury away from this season really hanging in peril. Did you go for a tackle? No. Because it wasn't quite right. We didn't have quite the...
Right. We were looking for perfect, didn't find perfect, so we passed pretty good 15 times on the way to drafting Junior Bergen.
Right. We're all about our offensive line, but we passed on Willie Lampkin, who was the highest graded offensive lineman in preseason, and was signed by the best offensive line in the game, the Eagles. We passed on that guy so we could take a smallish Montana State return guy who is small but isn't fast.
Makes sense. By the way, we do have a little bit of breaking news, and we'll get back to Jake Moody in a second. Jake Moody anxiety, if turned into power, could be enough to run a mid-sized city. I mean, that's how much anxiety comes with any Jake Moody kick. But what we got is a little breaking news, Larry, that we got to get to. Let me see if I can share this screen right here. Are you ready to get back in business with Kendrick Bourne? Because he's coming back to the 49ers. It's a one-year deal, $5 million max value on that. Ian Rappaport has it right now. Kendrick Bourne issuing, just like Michael Jordan, a two-word press release. I'm back. Well, he's not quite issuing the press release. It's just a graphic. Well,
and we got a glimpse of this yesterday. Barrows asked Shanahan about, hey, what's the status of Bourne? Bourne worked out for the Niners last week, left the facility, went to Washington, then announced on Thursday or Friday that, hey, I'm not going to sign with anybody this week. I'm going to take the weekend to think about it. And I think what he meant was, these teams are going to take the weekend and look at what they got, and then we'll see if they up their offer. And my guess is the Niners probably looked at their injury to, the Niners also got an injury to Juwan Jennings this week.
How much of this is Juwan Jennings? Hey, what do you know? His calf really is hurting after all, because Juwan Jennings didn't look like a wide receiver about to command a $20 million a year salary yesterday. So maybe this
that's,
is
that's a little... part of it, but also the Kittle injury. Don't forget the Kittle injury is also a major part of this because you can't go to Kittle. So you know, and the Kittle backup is not a blocker. So you're going to probably have to go to three wides, but that's a problem because you don't necessarily like your wide receivers or have a lot of wide receivers. So now you add Bourne and he gives you another wide receiver option. So, I mean, I like it, I guess, but I will say this. I don't think Bourne's the same guy that he was pre-2023.
Well, and he wasn't much. He wasn't much. Look at it this way. Whatever your most sepia tone romantic memories of Kendrick Bourne are, those weren't really great either. So
no, but Shanahan loves going down this road of it's like, let's you know, evaluate guys one time. And if we liked them once, we'll like them forever. You know, he has guys that he likes. I mean, look at this summer. Look at the guys they've picked up this summer. They're all guys for the most part. Keyshawn Vaughn was here before. Jeff Wilson was here before. Yep. Kendrick Bourne was here before. Robbie Chosen was here before. Malik Turner was here before. Are we seeing a trend? Yeah, everybody who's you know, been here before and they don't have to teach the offense to, if they've got a pulse, they're going to sign them.
And, you know, look, there's times where that strategy is the right thing to do. I just think the 49ers do it a little bit too much, and it prevents them from looking at new ideas because they're too busy going over old ideas. And I wish that trend would break a little bit. Getting back to our negatives, Larry, let me just say Kyle Shanahan does have a heroin problem, and Christian McCaffrey is his China cat. I mean, he cannot... If he gets a good play out of Christian McCaffrey, you can guarantee.
Of course, Damon is joking, everybody, before people start losing their minds on this and repurposing that. Of course, Damon does not mean that Kyle Shanahan has a heroin problem, but go ahead, Damon.
Heroin in terms of his running back and depending on him and not being able to, I mean, Brian Robinson Jr., that was a little methadone that, you know, Kyle tried on yesterday, but that methadone doesn't quite hit like the China cat smack that is Christian McCaffrey. So I'm going back to McCaffrey over and over and over and over and over and over and over. They ran Christian McCaffrey like he's as big and thick as Derrick Henry is. It's amazing. It's amazing that that guy doesn't ground down to a nub after just 1 week. But, you know, I get it. I get why Kyle Shanahan needed him. You know, on a day where Kittle gets knocked out of the game early, JJ's kind of a no-show. You know, I just think
I actually don't get it. I mean, you say you get it. I don't get it. I don't understand it. Somebody please explain this to me. How is a guy who's so incredibly valuable to you and was on the injured list and he was so injured that he couldn't go through a walkthrough the other day, and he's so injured that he can't participate in practice, but then game day, he gets 32 touches. I mean, he threw 10 passes and he had 22 runs. He caught 9. He had 31 touches, and Brian Robinson had 9 carries, and I hit 10.
So well, all of them were right behind Jake
Brendel. It was over 3-1, over 3-1 ratio of CMC to Robinson. That, first of all, that's not going to work on many fronts. It's not going to work because CMC is not going to stay healthy. It's not going to work because Brian Robinson is going to be pissed off. It's not going to work because you're going to wind up using CMC for a month and then he's going to be out for the year.
By the way, like, let me ask you,
why can't they figure out that CMC has to be utilized, but if he's so fragile that he can't do a walkthrough, and if he's so fragile that he has to take himself out of practices and he's limited, then why on earth is this was this a lie? Was this like an end? I'd rather you tell me that you were lying and playing games and that he's 100% fine and there was nothing ever going on. At least that's a game plan. At least that's a strategy. At least there's some semblance of reasoning involved there. Otherwise, you just showed me you're running a marathon and you just ran the first mile at some breakneck pace in flip-flops. But now you're going to run the next 25 miles in this total responsible fashion. So I have no idea what the Niners' plan is, but if you took it on face value, you would say either they were lying to us about the injury or they blatantly overused their injured running back. Which one is it?
I think it's a combination. Two things.
can be equally true. Once said a great broadcaster in San Francisco.
And I think that there's part of that there. I think there's an element of both of those things being in play. Let me ask you this, Larry. Did the 49ers get a player back, or did they get draft pick compensation when they traded Isaac Garendo?
They didn't trade him.
Oh, so why not play that guy who definitely has talent, definitely can catch a ball, definitely can go out and run some routes for you in the slot or out of the backfield, and can absolutely help you win a football game if you give him the chance to? He didn't even get on the field unless he played special teams. Did Garendo even have a snap on his body yesterday?
Yes, he played special teams. But yeah, where is Garendo? I mean, why can't you, you have 9 passes to McCaffrey. That couldn't have been 4 and 5 to Garendo. You really needed to give McCaffrey 30 plus touches. I mean, does anybody really believe that this is sustainable?
Let me ask you this. Don't you think Garendo would do the exact same, if not better, than Marquez Valdez-Scantling?
Where was he? I didn't even see him either.
He got out there. He was in the mix doing nothing.
He didn't make a catch.
No, he didn't. I don't know if he was even targeted.
Didn't even throw him the ball.
Yeah, they weren't even targeted, but he was out there.
Yeah, no, I mean, I just, if this is the plan with CMC and his body can withstand this punishment, then you know what? I'll stand corrected, but I won't stand corrected because his body can't withstand the punishment. And we're going to basically see, the Niners, most teams have 2 backs and they use a little bit of one, a little bit of the other, and they get through the entire season, like Seattle. Right? Seattle used a little bit of Charbonnet, a little bit of Walker. 12 carries for Charbonnet, 10 carries for Walker. Why can't the Niners, have like a normal, a sustainable plan? Instead, it's this totally unsustainable plan, which we're going to drive McCaffrey into the ground. Hopefully, when he does get hurt, he won't be out for the year. And then we'll use Brian Robinson exclusively. Because at that point, McCaffrey will be out of there.
Right. Brian Robinson will be your featured back.
Why can't you split it up a little bit more equitably? They act like CMC is just, he's a very good player, but you know what? Guess what he averaged? He averaged 3.1 yards a carry.
But
guess what Robinson averaged? 3.7.
Not his
Robinson fault. Had a better per average carry number than CMC. So why? Why does one guy have 22 carries and the other guy has 9 carries?
Well, and look,
you can tell the nobodies of the world to screw themselves, but you can't tell Brian Robinson that, because he's going to tell you to your face you're effed up, because he's a strong personality. So they're playing with fire on this one. They better split this up better. Yes, they got the win, and I guess that's the bottom line, but it's a cross-country drive,
right?
And you're not even out of California yet, and you're already having car problems.
I think that, Shanahan needs to become a little bit more dynamic in some of his play calling too. Like if McCaffrey's having success touching the ball 2-3 plays in a row, he's going to get the ball on play 4 and 5 as well. Like, it just, once he goes to him, he can't go away from him. And you'd think that now that everybody's got their eyes on McCaffrey, it's the perfect time to go away from him. A little razzle dazzle. Like, give me a play that Isaac Garendo works on in practice. And it's the only thing Isaac Garendo does in practice, because Isaac Garendo has been told Brian Robinson's here. That means we're not going to need you like we used to. But what we are going to do, Isaac, is give you 4 plays. And these 4 plays, when we call them, have to work, have to go for 3 yards every single time we call it. This is what you do. You are our magic, need a play in a game, wasn't expecting to see you, here it is, wrinkle. And on a day where, Kittle is out and JJ isn't doing much, and, I thought yesterday was the day where, give me a little bit of a wrinkle, especially in the red zone. It's 2nd and 3. They're absolutely looking at Christian McCaffrey getting the ball on 2nd and 3. Don't hand it to Christian McCaffrey to make it 3rd and 5 because he got stuffed in the backfield. Like, there's too much of that. There's just too much of that. McCaffrey is being met in the backfield far too often for a guy getting that many carries.
But it's a hell of an offensive line.
It's a great offensive line, Larry. No notes.
It's a great offensive line. And if you don't understand that it's a great offensive line, you don't know ball, and you're kind of a simpleton. And it's that kind of dialogue that just absolutely is so nauseating. You don't realize how great this offensive line is. Well, you're right, because you can't run and your quarterback's running for his life and was pressured 20 times in the first half and like 60% of his snaps, you're right. I can't appreciate the greatness of this O-line.
I don't understand it. It is beyond my thinking capability.
We're too simple for that.
So we started positive. We drifted into anxiety and negative. Larry, I know we got a whole bunch of supers we got to get to here, but let me just give everyone the facts, because here's where you stand after four quarters of football. The 49ers have started the season 1-0 now for the third consecutive year and for the 10th time in the last 14 years. So 1-0 is where they are. Seven of their last 10 season openers on the road have been won, so they're very comfortable opening the season on the road. I'll tell you that they're going to New Orleans next. New Orleans looked awful yesterday, so it should be a lot easier of a challenge. Larry will have as big of a challenge in New Orleans maybe as the 49ers, just getting from Baton Rouge after a day of drinking in an LSU game to the Superdome. God bless you, Krugers. May the Lord guide you on your path between those two cities. Shanahan is now 4-5 in season openers. And that was regular season win number 71 for Kyle Shanahan, which ties him with Buck Shaw for the third most wins by a coach in franchise history. So the next time Kyle Shanahan wins a football game, he will stand third all time by himself in terms of winning head coaches for the 49ers. He is 21 wins shy of Bill Walsh, 26 wins shy of George Seifert, for number one on the all-time 49ers coaching wins list with 98 regular season wins. So, you know, we love to bag on Kyle in good times and in bad. There's no doubt about that. He's a pretty good coach. And even though his offense sputtered a bit yesterday and it felt like Robert Saleh really saved the day, Shanahan and company go to 1-0. A winnable week two game is on their schedule. So, you know, we can complain about the details, but the overall, I guess, good start, right? They won. That's good. That's official.
Yeah, I mean, any wins, you know, a win is any, believe me, a win is better than a loss anytime, any way it comes, any way it shakes out. And credit them. I mean, this Seattle team, I don't think is going to have a great year, but it's still a representative defense for sure. And this was going to be, I mean, I don't know if you agree with this, but I personally feel like the Niners are going to have absolutely six war games against their division. They're not all these games, Arizona, Seattle, the Rams, they're all going to be wars. They're all going to be hard fought. They're going to be closely contested. I don't see the Niners blowing out Seattle. I don't see them blowing out the Rams. I don't see them blowing out the Cardinals. I don't think they can blow any of those teams off the map. I don't think any of those teams can blow them out. But it just sets up for six knockdown, drag out, what they call ice bag games. And yesterday was one of them. And luckily the Niners got through that one. Two guys I've got to mention, though, that I think when I watched upon the rewatch, I thought they really jumped off the screen outside of Purdy. With some of his good plays and bad plays, really.
Is this about to be a D Winter segment?
No, it was just going to be one quick mention for Ricky Pearsall. You know, Ricky Pearsall is fulfilling his potential. He caught four of his seven targets for 108 yards. That 45-yarder in the fourth quarter was nice. He took a couple hits. Ricky Pearsall is going to – he's not going to be a bust. You know, his first year was a throwaway year. I think this is much more indicative of the kind of player he's going to be. And I thought he was spectacular and better and better and better as the game went on. You know, Sometimes this early season guys get gassed because they don't play very much and they're not in shape. This guy's in great shape. And he was playing full speed at the end, and I thought he looked good. The other guy that, man, I don't know what to say about this guy, but every time I see the Niners play this guy, I think this is one of the greatest players I've ever seen. And this is Julian Love.
Oh, dude.
You know, what an elite player. He had the blitz sack of Purdy in the second quarter. He had the blocked, he had the caved in, you know, missed field goal, which got blocked.
The interception.
The guy is just an awesome player. I mean, he was great at Notre Dame. I don't know how the New York Giants ever let that guy get out of there because they're the ones who had him originally. And then he just departed quickly in free agency. Great signing by John Schneider. This guy, Julian Love, has got to be one of the NFL's handful of the most underrated players in all of pro football. He's just an awesome player, man. Just an awesome player.
Really good player. Absolutely. He's one of the best Seattle's got for sure.
And it comes through in the film. You're watching it, you're like, oh my God.
Right. Yeah. There's
Julian Love. He makes huge tackles. He makes big plays, special teams, hitter, nose for the ball. I mean, guys,
you don't have to look hard for him. You don't have to look for him. He pops out on the screen. He really, really does. You know, I know we got some supers to get to here, but can we just talk about that Sunday night game just a little bit? Because that was really an instant classic. What a finish in Buffalo. But it's incredible, Larry. I want to use what happened last night as an example of the evolving NFL and what a Super Bowl does for a guy's reputation. And it's too bad that Kyle doesn't have one, because it would certainly save him a whole bunch of headache. John Harbaugh won a Super Bowl. John Harbaugh has always got a really good football team. It is fundamentally sound. It is well-constructed. It's well-built. Usually has great regular seasons. And then for whatever reason, falls flat in the playoffs. But for one year where they go on and he beats his brother in the Super Bowl. And let me tell you, that Super Bowl Lombardi trophy is doing an awful lot of heavy lifting for John Harbaugh's reputation. I saw this from Josh Dubow last night of the AP. John Harbaugh's 17 blown double-digit leads in the second half is the most by any head coach in football since 1991. Most blown double-digit leads in the fourth quarter over the last 10 seasons, playoffs included. John Harbaugh's done it 8 times. Kyle Shanahan's done it 6 times. So basically, you've got a guy who won a Super Bowl, has really good regular seasons, but blows an awful lot of games late. Does that sound like anybody you know? Does that sound like a coach that you're familiar with? But one guy has a Super Bowl and gets to live rent-free, and the other guy is on a game-by-game referendum of, can he even do it? And that is such a difference. One Super Bowl for John Harbaugh has changed, and he's a good coach. But, man, he blew it last night. The Ravens lost because of a singular choice that John Harbaugh made. And even though no football game comes down to one play, and Chris Collinsworth is even saying, like, you know, I understand that Buffalo's in field goal range if you go for it here. Fourth and 3, you're averaging like 9 yards a carry between Derrick Henry and Lamar, and you punt it back to a red hot Josh Allen, who is just on a, I'm going to beat you if I have the ball last, written all of. John Harbaugh didn't coach the game that he was in. He coached a situation that he's been bred for his entire life, but that situation's now evolving. You have to go for it on fourth and short in many more situations than anyone would have ever imagined. And last night was one of them. The Ravens didn't go for it to end the game by keeping the ball. They gave the ball back to Josh Allen. And what do you know? You know, a field goal kicker who they signed on Wednesday comes in and wins the game.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, you have Lamar, you have Derrick Henry, and you have, you know, Linderbaum at center, who's arguably the best center. You have Ronnie Stanley. Your offensive line is fully healthy at this juncture. You're running the ball for 8.2 yards per carry. The Ravens ran for 238 yards on 29 carries. They averaged 8.2 yards per carry. So the star of their and on a night where your defense, whatever you think of your defense is on the verge of giving up nearly 500 yards. You never could stop Josh Allen, and you don't go for it, and you get super conservative. I'm going to lean on my defense. It's like, read the room, bro. Read the room. Your defense isn't doing it, and you're averaging 8. You should never, ever, ever lose a game where you're rushing for 8.2 yards a carry and they're rushing for 3.5 yards a carry. And that's what happened.
I got one for you, Larry. This is also from Dubow last night. Or maybe it wasn't from Dubow. I saw it somewhere else. I just got it off of Twitter. Teams that scored 40 points behind 240 rushing yards were 277-0 before last night. Now they're 277-1.
Well, they technically they had 238, so they didn't quite have 240. But yeah, I hear you. I mean, it's, you know, it's unbelievable. I mean, if you run for 200 yards, you got to win. And if you're running for 8 yards a carry and you don't win, that you probably didn't run enough. You know, maybe they should have run even more than they did. They ran 29 times. Lamar threw 19 times. I mean, it's like you don't have a trick play where you've got the most mobile quarterback going. You got one of the most powerful offensive lines going. You got one of the best running backs going, and you're punting on 4th and 3 to a deep, to an offense that you cannot stop. And at that point you knew you couldn't stop them. So it was unbelievable. I mean,
you got to coach the game you're in.
Well, I'll say this too. There's something to be said, and I don't know how you feel about this. The Niners won the time of possession advantage decisively, and so did Buffalo. So there's something to be said for winning the time of possession in week one, because in week one, this is usually the first game all year that your big guys, your offensive linemen, play the entire game.
Right.
Because they've been playing, they played one series in the first game. They played a half in the second game. They played probably two or three series in the third game. And now they're going to be asked to play 4 quarters, oftentimes in some brutal heat in September in certain spots around the country. So to me, it seems like the one thing I love the most about the Niners, it kind of leads us back to the Niners, but the one thing I love the most about Shanahan's plan yesterday was the ball control nature of the plan, where the Niners said, you know what? We have a young defense. Our young defense needs to be protected. So we are going to come out and dominate the time of possession as much as we can. I thought Shanahan's best drive was that third quarter drive where I was looking at the, we have a brand new statistical guy who breaks down the games for us on the Krug Show now, a statistical analyst. And he goes through every play with a fine tooth comb, looking for every aspect of it. Here is yesterday, the 49ers in the third quarter ran the ball 61.1% of the time and passed it only 38% of the time. If you said to me, why did the Niners win? More than anything, I'd say that they committed to the run coming out of the dressing room at halftime, and they ran it in that third quarter, dominated the time of possession. And because of that, the Nick Bosa's, the Bryce Huff's of the world, the Niner defense had that fourth quarter juice that they really lacked when those two teams played last year at Levi's. Remember how the Niners had no juice in the fourth quarter of that game, and they were super gassed, and Geno kind of ran through them all the way for a touchdown? This Niner defense had way more juice, and it was largely because of Shanahan's devotion to the run game coming out of the dressing room. I thought it was huge.
And look, and he stuck with it even though he was trailing, right?
Right.
Which is good. When you know you've got to play to your strengths and in your game plan. And those are things that did go well for the 49ers. Like and subscribe. We've got almost 350 people on my end. Larry, I'm sure you got about 1,000 people sitting in your room right now. It is great to have everyone back. We're going to be coming to you every morning after the 49ers play 9:15 a.m. West Coast time. It is wonderful to have you here. Like and subscribe to both channels if you would please. And Larry, shall we hit
some supers? Let's do it. Corey Patterson's in the house. Touchdown to Tongas. At first, it looked bad to me. Yeah. It was one of, you know what it was? It was like one of those Clay Thompson.
No.
Yes. Says the first touchdown to Tongas at first looked bad to me, but after seeing from all the different viewpoints when Purdy threw, Tongas was running to the corner, then stopped, and the quarterback and the DB passed by. The DB lost sight on the ball. I was trying to teach my youngest son last night because he plays corner. And I said to him, Damon, I said, what's the mistake that this DB made on this play? And he's like, he put his arm in too late. I'm like, he lost sight of the ball. He never makes a play on the ball because he just didn't see it coming. And from Purdy's perspective, that ball was going to Tongas or nobody. And it was probably going out of bounds, and Tongas kind of rescued it from going out of bounds. But it looked horrible.
It did. Let me just wrap up with this too on Tongas. This is a guy who I saw this from Nick Wagner. In his career before Sunday, 20 games, 51 offensive snaps, 10 routes run, only one target, never had an NFL catch until yesterday when he played 31 offensive snaps, 15 routes, three targets, three catches, 15 yards, and the touchdown that decided the game. You and I have watched this guy go from practice squatter to, you know, called upon because Kittle was injured. All you can ask for in your backups is answer the bell when it rings. Congratulations to Tongas. He answered the bell when it rang. And for the first time in like forever, the 49ers get two tight end touchdowns on the same day in the same game. Not since like Vernon Davis and Delanie Walker back in like 2011 had they had a double tight end touchdown afternoon. So ta-da, whatever that is.
It's great to have a backup tight end that can block, right? Because then you can still run the ball, and they have that in Farrell. But it's also really nice to have a backup tight end who's got good hands, and that's what Tongas is. He's not moving people in the run game, but he can catch, and you saw it there. Joseph Ehrenberg, offense is so bullshit, but the W is a W.
Yes,
I hear.
Correct.
Zachary Kelway, I think Kittle isn't eating enough and training too hard. That's what I think his hamstring injury is from. His physique is great right now, too great.
Overtrained? I don't know. I don't know. It feels like there are more pulled hamstrings involving 49ers than any team on the planet at all times. It happens in games. It happens in practice. It happens when we're watching. It happens when we're not watching. You know, there's somebody probably pulled a hamstring at Levi Stadium today getting out of their car. I mean, it's just, it happens too often. And it's a shame that it happened. And
can I tell you my favorite pulled hamstring story of all time?
Please.
I'm in the KNBR, my first run at KNBR, it's like probably 2000, year 2000. And Ralph had his Mr. T's BP thing. Do you remember that? Where Mr. T said he could hit Kruko out and all that. Remember that?
So we had this big. Can I hit a home run at the ballpark? Yes, I do remember.
Right. That. So before that, they did like a home run derby, and it was me, Patrick Marlowe, Jeff Friesen, the Sharks, Jerry Porter of the Raiders, who hit a Titanic blast. Anyway, Jerry Porter went before me and hit a couple out, and I was like, oh my God! Now here comes me. I gotta hit the ball out of the infield. I gotta make sure I don't. You know, I'm probably not gonna hit it out, but I gotta hit it representative shot. I take the biggest swing on the very first swing and hit the ball really well. It went one bounce to the make-believe fence they had there in the middle of the outfield. Mm-hmm. And as I followed through, I felt both hamstrings pull at the same time. On the first swing, Damon.
Bilateral hamstring pull?
Bilateral hamstrings up my ass. Just immediately up. I'm like, oh, and I went the rest of the BP with pulled hamstrings and then just stumbled off. And oh, it was so bad.
Duh, did you have a ghost runner going down to first?
Oh, thank God there was no runner. Oh, my God, that would have been bad. Kyle L., did you get a chance to watch the end zone view? What was the issue with the interior? Was it all Jake Brendel? Zero push anytime we went middle. They didn't. I mean, I did watch it again. I haven't watched the all 22 copy. I watched the TV copy again last night. I'll watch the all 22 this afternoon, and I'll get you a little bit more details for Niners Nightly by tonight. But yeah, I'm going to be looking at that as well. Ben Diesel, 85. It was so good to see the grit that Sala brings return to San Francisco. D Winters really showed off his improvements, which is very promising. Yep, D Winters looked good. He looked good. And Sala, you know, what a great addition Sala has been.
Why no Nick Martin yesterday? Why wasn't Nick Martin dressed?
Because he doesn't have a special teams role right now. And so they didn't have, but that could have been a huge mistake if Warner had gotten seriously hurt early.
That made you hold your breath for a little minute there, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. And then when I saw it, I thought, is it a neck thing or concussion? But no, he just got kicked in the mouth and he was just, you know, basically bleeding from the mouth. Ricardo Rodriguez, Bill's got a kicker on a red eye flight to kick a winning field goal. I think the Niners can get a kicker better than Moody. Game ball goes to Sala in the D. Yeah, no question. Greatness 54. I have to hear Forrester talk about Jake Brindle being a Pro Bowl center. I'm going to tear my hair out. The guy is trash. Yeah. I mean, it's like, come on. I mean, if he's really good, then I need to see really good results.
Right.
And I'm not seeing really good results. I'm seeing a team that's struggling to run the ball and can't protect the quarterback.
You know, someone's like, Kyle, are you going to move on from your kicker? If he was going to move on from his kicker after one miss, he had the wrong guy on the roster to begin with. They're trying to make this Jake Moody thing happen. Again, if Jake Moody had been drafted in the sixth round or undrafted, he wouldn't be on the team anymore.
I don't know. I don't know if you can go with to Niner fans with the one miss. How about one miss a week? I mean, he's the guy's missed a lot. Blood Moon says if PM, who's PM? Oh, Patrick. Well, who's this? If PM Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, or JB, who's JB? Threw that pass, Joe Burrow. Would we question it? No, we wouldn't. And it's not that we're questioning the pass. It's just you live by it, you die by it. If you throw the 50, Brock Purdy will throw the 50-50 ball. That's his curse or his gift, right? And if depending on where that 50-50 ball results, let's just say this. You can't play quarterback in the NFL if you're 100% unwilling to throw the 50-50 ball. But you're not going to play quarterback long if you throw too many of them.
By the way, we're talking about, Blood Moon saying, would we question it if Joe Burrow had done that? Let me tell you what would have happened if Brock Purdy had done that. Do you realize that yesterday, in the second half, the Bengals had 7 yards of offense? You got Ja'Marr Chase, you got Joe Burrow, you got T. Higgins. You had 7 yards of offense, and they won. I mean, they won. That's how bad the Browns are, right? But they had
Browns have a worse kicker than the Niners.
7 yards of offense in a half of football. It is the least. It's the fewest yards by a winning team in the last 25 years in a half of football. Cleveland outgained Cincinnati 327 to 144, doubled them up on first downs and lost by one. So as Joe Burrow is now my fantasy quarterback, and let me tell you, yesterday he stunk. If Brock Purdy ever played that bad over a half, you'd have people jumping off the Transamerica building and off the Golden Gate Bridge. And if that can happen to Joe Burrow, I guess it could happen to anybody.
JC Manius is breaking news. KB.
On the way. Kendrick Bourne solving all problems.
Yeah, I don't know, guys. It's not, just remember this. Jeff Wilson was on the way too. And he, suddenly it wasn't the same Jeff Wilson. Don't expect Kendrick Bourne to be the same Kendrick Bourne. To me, he's not the same guy or anything close to it. He does have a message for the 49ers though. He said on his social media, missed y'all faithful. God is the greatest. So he's happy to be back. Joseph Ernberg says KB won't do a effing thing. Get younger players. I agree. Go for younger players. There are younger players out there that are better than this guy.
Or go for an older player who's definitely better. Anyone happen to notice Keenan Allen's production in week one? I sure did.
Yeah, Keenan played well for the Chargers. But you know what? Here's the thing. Who's to say Keenan would come here? We don't know that.
More money makes things like that happen.
Sometimes. He went back to the place where he's comfortable, but he looks good there. Joseph Ernberg says, we signed Bourne for $5 million, but not Keenan for $8 million. Yeah, seriously. I have to agree on that one. Fuji Simeon Moody even had some kickoffs lead to touchbacks. We got this one from Sonia Leary. Allen almost threw interception in the end zone, and it was caught, and he is a hero. Purdy does it, and he almost made a mistake. Love the show. The results are the results. The way it actually happens is the way it actually gets evaluated. Barry Ford, bang, bang, just getting here. Lady Luck was kind to the Niners. Glad to see Pearsall show up. How bad is Kittle's injury? We'll find out today. They're doing an MRI.
He's getting an MRI. Who else is getting? I think Fred Warner's getting an MRI today too, right?
I think it's JJ, isn't it? Isn't Jennings getting an MRI? Yeah,
and Juwan Jennings is getting an MRI today.
On the shoulder, I think, for Jennings. David Young, guys, do we think Moody's still on the team by the home opener? Loving the coverage here in Belfast. What does it say?
It's a Antrim. It's a place in Belfast, apparently. Okay. Thank you, David, for watching from Belfast and tipping in euros. We do appreciate it very, very much. And
do you think Moody's on the team? Yes. I mean, Shanahan has made it clear that he's going. Now, was that Shanahan just talking and they're going to cut him today? I don't know. But, I mean, they seem like Lynch has said Jake Moody's going to be our kicker for a long, long time. So they're very, very stubborn on this front. And I'm not 100% sure why.
He absolutely needs a clean sheet coming out of New Orleans. You're going to be in a dome, dude. Like, you need to make your kicks in a dome.
Yeah. Otherwise, you know, he may have to stay in the quarter. David Young, guys. We got that one. Actually, that's a repeat of the one before. David, you doubled down on us, but thank you. Thank you, David. Fuji Simeon, with the new kickoff rules, kickers like Moody, who can kick with power, no longer needed, just needed to be accurate and consistent kickoffs. Moody is not. I mean, I brought this up to you and to others in the postgame show. If you had a debate and we just said, okay, hey, let's do a live stream. And we just said, okay, guys, today on the live stream, we're going to debate who is the best kicker in the NFL. Something tells me that the winning argument would be about who's got the highest kicking percentage. It wouldn't be, hey, man, Cam Little of the Jags made a 70-yarder, thus he's the best.
Right. It's the guy in Dallas. It's the guy in Kansas City. That's, you know,
it's not about distance. It's about consistency. Yeah. You know? The best kicker is not the guy who kicked the longest field goal ever. It's the best kicker who makes the highest percentage. 126 Jack 3 says, how about them backup tight ends making 85 proud? Yep.
How about them backup tight ends?
No question. Pib Ford, we willin', but did we win? Our O line is trash.
We wilin', I think. Is he wilin' or willin'? Wilin', either way, got on an airplane with a W. That can't be bad.
Fuji says, rave reviews on the bay shrimp cocktail sauce on crackers. How's the recipe I gave him? Thank you, Larry, for the recipe. Even if you are a Wildcat, enjoy New Orleans and food. Larry, yes, we will definitely have a good time in New Orleans.
Did you book a table at Koshan?
I haven't yet, but you know what? I was thinking, do I take Kev to Koshan, which is not in the quarter, or do I try to take him to a couple places that are like in the quarter? Koshan is fantastic.
I think you're going to stumble into an eating opportunity in the quarter. It's going to happen. So you need to plan it there. Koshan is a go out of your way restaurant to go to. And it's not that far out of the way. It's in the warehouse district there. So yeah. You can still walk from the quarter to Koshan if you had to.
Yeah. Well, me and Kev and I think JD are getting together for dinner one of those nights. So that's maybe awesome. Koshan. Gosh, Koshan was amazing with the fried alligator. How good was the fried alligator?
It's fantastic.
It was absolutely amazing.
You didn't know you needed this much alligator in your life until you're eating it.
Oh my God. Fried alligator. It's until you had it, you know, it's an incredible spot.
The three most important words in food: taste like chicken.
And of course, we'll probably get a couple beignets. Got to hit Cafe Dumont for some beignets. Somebody's like Arnaud's in the French Quarter. Oh, believe me, there'll be
Arnaud's is fantastic.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe you'll have to hit that. Somebody said fried alligator? Ew.
No.
Come on, Dazzy. No, not ew. It's incredible. Damon, that's it for us. We're an hour and 13 minutes into our live stream. We've got over almost 2,700 people watching in one form or another. Thanks to all of them. Let me put out here, because we of course are on my side brought to you by Habas Law and the great people at Habas Law. I got a shout out. They did something that is so cool this weekend. Omar and Tarek Habas, they stepped up big for the community this last Saturday. They teamed up with the Humane Society of Silicon Valley and they paid for every single pet adoption from the Milpitas Ames campus, as well as the Petco West San Jose Adoption Center, and all paid for by Omar and Tara Habas. So today's show is sponsored by Habas Law. For more than 40 years, Omar Habas and his son Tarek have been standing up for people right here in the Bay Area. They're fierce, relentless attorneys. They don't back down until justice is done. When you need a great attorney, you need the best. My dad was an attorney. My brother's a judge. My sister's an attorney. I know a good attorney when I see one. And these guys are rooted right here in the Bay. They're official partners of Bay Area institutions like the Giants, the Earthquakes, the Sharks, San Jose State, Santa Clara. So if you need someone in your corner, call the insurance company. Call the firm the insurance companies are hoping you never call, and that's Habas Law. They'll fight to make it right. Visit their website, habaslaw.com, 1-800-INJURED. Once again, they will fight to make it right. And thanks to Habas Law for being a proud sponsor of the Krug Show. On this note, Damon, we'll give you the final thought on the day. We did game balls last night, the Habas Law game balls, but now after having 24 hours to kind of, read about it, maybe watch it again, take a look. Give me your final thought on this one brought to us by Habas Law.
I'm going to give a game ball to Nick Bosa on the defensive side of the football, and I'm going to give a game ball to Christian McCaffrey on the offensive side of the football. No one on special teams qualified for a game ball. As a matter of fact, you owe me a football. That's how bad special teams was. Average game. Here's the thing. The 49ers weren't winning with a lot of B-minus, C-plus efforts last year. The fact that this year starts with a B-minus or C-plus, it's not what anyone wanted to see, but you got to win out of it. I mean, that was great. The Niners, there's a lot of coaching improvement to be found in the game tape this week. You have an inferior opponent, one of the easier games you will have certainly on the road all year, coming up next in New Orleans. Take advantage of that. Get to 2-0 and all's forgiven. I mean, I don't care. Jake Moody can miss three more field goals if you're at 2-0. Get to 2-0. And I think that they can do it. They got the right opponent. And, honestly, they got to be feeling good getting out of that game with a win. I think that they know that they played well enough to have earned it. And they kind of got away with one at the same time. So, good start to the year. Again, when you've only played one game and you're 1-0, how much can you really complain about? It's a results-oriented business. They got the results they needed. Hopefully the process improves. And they did it without any real impact from their rookie defensive line, which is going to be the soul of this team eventually. How C.J. West, Alfred Collins, Mykel Williams all play around Bosa and Huff is really going to matter. And they didn't do anything in week one. So hopefully there's nowhere to go but up. And I'm glad we're underway. Larry, it's great to see you again. It really is. I'm so glad that football's back, baby. I feel normal again.
So your game balls go to Bosa and McCaffrey.
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to go with Tongas on offense. Just, come on, just man. Cause. I mean, way to go, Tongas. I mean, you never know how you're going to react in the moment, right? We all, hey, that moment happens. Maybe it's in real life. Maybe it's in a game. But how are you going to react in that moment? And Tongas reacted in the moment. He saw the ball fluttering. He saw the ball coming towards him. He knew there wasn't a lot on it, and he attacked that thing like a lion.
Go meet the ball. Don't let it come to you. Go meet that ball.
Yeah, he attacked that football. I love that about Tongas. So I got to give my offensive game ball to Tongas, and then I got to give my defensive game ball. I talked a lot in the last couple of weeks about how the Seattle team was running the ball really effectively in the preseason, 5.5 yards a carry in almost all three of their games. They ran for over 200 yards against Kansas City. And the Niners held Kenneth Walker down to 2 yards a carry. They held Charbonnet to 3.9 a carry. They held Seattle to 3.2 a carry after they had run for 5 yards all summer. So I got to give it up to Warner and to Winters. Those guys combined for 14 tackles, 9 solo, and 3 TFLs. Winters played in the backfield more than I've ever seen him before. That speed and that attacking ability, now that he knows the defense, that's what they really missed. That's what they missed. What Devondre Campbell did was, if he ever made tackles, they were always 3-4 yards down the field. I saw Chaz Surratt in the preseason make 11 or 12 tackles in a game where 10 of them were 4 or 5 yards down the field. So where you make the tackle is as important, if not more, than that you made the tackle. And I felt like Winters and Warner were seeing it, they were attacking it, and they were getting upfield and making plays on the other side of the line of scrimmage. So the fact that those guys neutralized the run game, Winters and Warner, it was more than just those two, but those guys were, you know, at the front of the line. They absolutely get my game
back. How about Upton Stout, who got picked on a little bit in that game? And Jackson Smith and Jigba gave Upton Stout quite a baptism of NFL talent. But he made a big play when he got his fingers on that ball at the end of the game. So I felt like we got a, you know, a little something to worry about in Upton Stout and a little something to believe in, too. I thought he had a, you know, of all the rookies who played, he and Siegel did the most.
No question. So there you go. Our Habas Law game balls, once again, brought to you by Habas Law, 1-800-INJURED. They will fight to make it right. Thanks to Omar and Tarek Habas for being proud sponsors of the Krug Show. That's going to do it for us for the day. I'm going to go watch this game on the All 22 and then hit the gym. I'll be back for Niners Nightly, YouTube only tonight on Niners Nightly. And then, you know, we'll have, I believe, YouTube only on Monday and Tuesday. And then we're on the radio Wednesday and Thursday. Friday, we're back on YouTube. And then we're off to New Orleans. Kev and I will be in New Orleans. There'll be no Niners show on Saturday, but we'll have lots of coverage from New Orleans and lots of videos from the quarter. And we'll try to give you the sights and sounds and smells and all that of, I don't know if it smells, but we'll try.
Enjoy the etouffee somewhere outside of Death Valley, baby. You're going to LSU, a Saturday night game at LSU. That's as good as it gets. That's SEC, baby. That's you're going to have such a good time. You and Kevin have a great time. Have a great time, obviously, in New Orleans and at the Superdome as well. You and I will be back at it Friday on Wake Up. How about this, Larry? I'm doing a call-in show thanks to our friends at ShowUs.TV, and you can get in line for that call-in show, which we're going to be doing at 8 p.m. Tuesday night West Coast time on YouTube. So we're going to have a little something special this week. A few guests I'm cooking up this week. We're going to have Hold the Mayo from New Orleans, this guy who's just an incredible content creator around the Saints. He'll be joining me at some point in time this week. We will talk about red beans and rice. And the New Orleans Saints, and it's going to be a really good time. Larry, we'll talk again on Friday. We'll wish you the best then and travel safe then. But
sounds good. And also, we should tell everybody we'll be back on Friday at 9 a.m. Don't miss it. Also, we're going to New Orleans courtesy of our sponsor, Clawdaddy Arcades. Clawdaddy Arcades is footing the bill for the Krug Show to fly across country and stay in New Orleans for 4 nights, and he's footing the whole bill. So thank you to Clawdaddy Arcades. He's a great follow on Instagram at @claw_daddy_arcades to find a location near you. He's got a brand new location that just opened in Capitola Mall. He's got another one opening in Visalia Mall. So thanks to Clawdaddy Arcades.
How about this? How about this?
For sponsoring the Krug Show.
Clawdaddy doesn't have to send me anywhere. I'd just like to be sent a roll of quarters to go play some video games.
If I gave you a roll of quarters and you walked into an arcade, your first video game would be?
Going straight to Galaga every single time. Galaga, baby. I'm old school. Give me the Galaga.
I kind of like the centipede with the ball that sometimes you get your finger kind of pinched in there.
Yeah, that can hurt.
That kind of hurt.
You but know what really hurts when you're playing Golden Tee and you're going for a big drive and you pinch both your thumbs at the top of the ball.
That's painful. That's painful.
Well,
Anyway, that's going to do it for us. I think we got all the supers. We got that one. Yep, we do. We got them all. All right, that's going to do it for us. Thanks to all of you. Thanks to our sponsors. Hit like and subscribe on your way out the door.
Good job, Mary. Good job.
Shop all of our sponsors. Get out there and, you know, go Niners. Go Niners. You know, maybe they'll give them Miatas at the end of the year for the razor.
Yeah.
Peace.